When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, and welcome back to Action Jacks. Have time out. Greg Pappas on the board. There's a Matt Burn here in a little bit. SB Futures down 275. NASDAQ Futures, of course, up 28. We've got Apple as one of the movers. We got Apple up $1.52 as it keeps going up now, like every single day. We're not sure that the valuations, Greg, maybe Cramer was right that since NVIDIA has moved to an incredible valuation, they all have to be the same place.
Why not?
I mean, they might as well be.
What's going to stop them is the real question.
I don't know. You know, that always is a good question, but it is always the question. And yet sometimes, historically, something always does. Now, it doesn't mean it will this time, but, you know, why didn't we just keep going in 2000? Why didn't we keep going in 2007? I mean, I don't know. Why didn't they keep going in 2029? The question is, I mean, at some point things get a little too frosty. And
did you use AI over the weekend at all?
My internet conked out, so I guess no.
So you were AI-less?
I was AI-less.
Oh.
I was trying to figure
anything
out.
Anything that you want to ask it? From
yeah,
the
where's the, who had the cheapest 2x8s?
Where are the cheapest 2x8s?
2x8 by 12 ground contact wood.
2x8s. All right. 2x8 wood.
So I'm going to ask you, what's a 2x8? How big is it really?
It says you want to explore multiple sources, physical stores, online retailers.
Nobody does online.
Here's a big box home improvement stores. Home Depot and Lowe's often have the most competitive pricing.
Local lumber yards. Here. So there, and, I actually got them at Home Depot. They were cheaper. Menards.
Yeah, local Menards in the Midwest. And possible woodworker source and lumber liquidators. If not a,
I was pretty surprised to find out that they were cheaper at Home Depot than Menards. They usually are not, but they were.
Interesting.
So I went over there and I ran into this very nice fellow, and I did recognize one thing, Greg. As you age a little bit.
What do you need 2x8s for?
What?
What?
I told you we're putting the deck.
Oh,
back up
the
on
deck.
The deck.
Yeah.
The deck.
You can't just restain the.
When you tear the thing off.
Oh,
so
you
they
tore
could,
it off.
So they could. Repair the roof, you're not going to put the old stuff back on. Plus, I want to do it better than it was. We can make him better than he was before. Remember that, the $6 million man?
Interesting.
So, of course, it's now a chief design deck, which is way better than it was before.
Have you considered LVL, laminated veneer lumber?
Nah. Well, I mean, you don't use that for your base anyway. That's just the top. So we're still on the base.
Still on the base.
The issue was, no, of course nobody cares about this, but the issue was there actually are, when the place was remodeled and the deck was designed for there, because it's an older home, you don't just plop a deck down on your roof, right?
It sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Well, I mean, you can do it up to a certain point depending on the roof, depending how it's, but you need a structural engineer to tell you you know, I mean, if you designed your deck for a roof and you had a flat roof like nobody does anymore, well, actually people do, but don't have it seen on houses too much. If you have a flat roof, you're going to have either a lot of supports or you might have to put an I-beam every now and then. Because I mean, it's your weight on a deck is going to be higher. Not to mention all the wood and stuff you put up there, and all the people. But even if you just put the wood, I mean, the wood's going to be how many hundred pounds? And even if it just snows on it,
right?
You got to account for the difference. So, the garage, I actually have the part where you might want to cook out if you want to. I actually put a patio in there with pavers. You know, the half pavers. The reason why I could do that, the garage was designed to have a hot tub up there for some reason. So there's a huge I-beam.
That's a great reason.
Well, okay, but I'm saying there was a huge I-beam running across the garage, and the rafters are like 8 inches apart. So it was designed for some huge hot tub. So I was able to, weight-wise, put pavers up there. You couldn't just do that in a regular garage and land on your head.
Your car.
Well, anyway, the thing was, it had... One of the issues with the deck was the two I-beams. They put 2x10s inside the I-beams, right, and then hung the stringers from there, or hung the cross beams from there, cross braces, not beams. Well, it meant that the I-beams were actually like a quarter or 3/8 of an inch above where those were. So you had this bulge whenever there was an I-beam, and you couldn't screw it down. So this time...
It's like a stud only on the floor.
Yeah, yeah. It was sticking up. So this time we put the ones back in there, screwed them into the I-beam from the top. Okay, and then we put...
Who'd you have doing this for you?
I got my guys.
Your guys?
My guys.
Sounds expensive.
No. I got guys. So this time we put another 2x10 next to it and raised it up and screwed it in there. So now there's the one that's sitting in the I-beam, and there's one next to it that's up 16th inch higher than the I-beam. So now when we put the actual deck down, it's going to be nice and flat, and there's two bulges in the middle. So there. That's more than you needed to know.
Is it like... How big are these bulges? Are we going to trip?
No, I'm saying they're not going to be there anymore.
They're not going to be any anymore.
No, it's good. They're going to be fine.
And for a low price of $20,000?
No, God, no. I mean, I got my guy who works with his two nephews, and they do a terrific job, and I go get all the stuff. So I got to go haul. So that's what I noticed.
That's why you got the pickup.
Well, yeah. So the guy at the Home Depot, I said, do you have 6 foot 2/8? Well, no, we don't. We have 8 foots. I said, I see you have 12 foot. And he goes, yeah. I said, how about cutting them in half?
How about cutting them in half? Yeah. Oh, I didn't think of that one.
Well, and then he says, well, we could do that. I'll do that for you. He says, it's a lot cheaper. No kidding. Because like the 8 footer is like $15, and the 12 footer is like $20. So if you cut it in half, it's 10. You know. So anyway, so then of course the things are the highest ones up there. I'm helping the guy lift them down.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know, all I can think of is
all you need is one accident.
Well, you know, plus I'm standing on the brace thing. I'm thinking, you know, boy, I used to be a whole lot stronger. This used to be like really easy. Now it's not.
Glad there was no injuries.
Yeah. No kidding. But it was okay. What was I going to tell the guy? I couldn't do it. I mean, come on. I'm not a girly man. I'm a manly man. You know. So the guy says, how about you grab that end? I go, okay. Well, let's put it this way. He was younger.
How about you grab that end?
Get one of your buddies to grab the other. No, but I tell you, if you ever want to see guys scatter, the downstairs at one point, this is years ago, the downstairs is so screwed up, the garden apartment. It had, some of it had concrete, but a lot of it.
What's a garden apartment?
Is the one...
It's the basement.
It's the basement.
Yeah.
But it's not really the basement because it's like halfway down. You have a window that you can see out of. So it's not really... It's a little bit below grade. It's not a basement.
I think garden apartment is a Midwest term.
Yeah.
Maybe just Chicago term.
I think that sounds like our man, Matt. So anyway, I'm looking here this weekend. For those, you know, around the rest of the country, of course, all I did was drive around Saturday doing some shopping and stuff, listening to the news radio, and all I did was talk about a double murder in Texas. Now, I don't ever want to see anybody get killed anywhere, even in Texas. But why in Chicago we have to go outside the city to find a murder? I have no clue. This weekend we did, how did we do this year? We did 8 killed, and as of 7 p.m. last night, we were 8 killed and 34 wounded. It was actually way better than 2020 when we...
Was that just Sunday?
That's this weekend.
Oh, this weekend.
But now 2020, we had 17 killed, 96 wounded. That was a hell of a weekend.
Yikes.
This is Father's Day weekend. There probably was a few more last night after 7, so this isn't the total, but June total, and where the hell are we? Juneteenth is Wednesday. Well, there is no trading, by the way, and there is no show. Today's the 17th, so we're a little more than halfway through June. 26 killed, 159 wounded, a total of 185 shot. I'm going to take the under and 10 of them.
This is morbid.
10 of them have an arrest. I'll take the under and 10. Where would you be on that?
I don't know. Does that mean released?
I'm just saying arrested. At all.
At all? Yeah.
I could find out the number tomorrow night when I meet with my guys, but I'm going to take the under on 10. Because I know 2 weeks ago there was nobody arrested. How are we doing on this? I don't think we're doing all this hot. And a lot of this stuff, you know, Greg, plays into this election and where people think the world is going. Not that, you know, it kind of makes any difference in the presidential office, but I was reading this weekend that, of course, you know, always, you never know what you're reading on this crap. The guys from the right say that Biden was in California and Obama had to kind of lead him off the stage when he was done talking.
That's kind of par for the course, huh?
Well, then Trump met with the 80 CEOs on Friday or Thursday. And every report I read on that was some people went there with the intention of supporting him and walked away. They said the man can't hold a thought, wanders around, he throws these things out there, and when somebody asks him what he actually plans on doing, he has absolutely no idea what his program would be to get there. Or a lower tax rate, it's the same crap from 8 years ago. But he has no plan.
Is that surprising?
No, I'm saying, but this is, both guys are degrading about as fast as we've ever seen anything right in front of our very eyes, and yet one of them somehow is going to be president.
Are you being ageist right now?
No, I think it's very possible. Hell, I have adult beverages once a month with a lot of guys that are retired judges and lawyers that are 85 that are sharp as a tack. These guys aren't. You know, I mean, it doesn't mean there are people that are 90 years old that are sharp. They may not be able to do the physical schedule, you know, flying here and there and all over the place, but they're not idiots.
I think the buzz online is that they're going to replace Biden with someone else, or he's going to pull out himself.
Well, the problem there is, what are they going to do with Harris? No way on earth she runs as president. And as I think for him to run her as vice president when people think he's not going to... And this is not a gender or race-related thing.
Some people think he's going to help his son out and then say that disqualifies him from the race, and he's going to say, I'll take care of my family. And
first of all,
step aside.
If you read the internet all day long, like some people, not accusing you of that.
All day.
All day,
every day.
Not all day. But some will say something about everything, right?
I don't know. Not a lot get traction.
What does that mean?
In order to show up in certain feeds, you know, you have to have at least a few retweets or...
You have to have been an idiot for a while?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
You can't just be a fresh idiot?
So, yeah, some people think he's going to pull himself out. Some people think the Democrats are going to replace him in the middle of the convention or whatever.
Well, I mean,
there's going to be some kind of manufactured problem which will allow them to swap him out with somebody.
I would love to see both of them swapped out. I think there's probably three or four people in Republicans.
Be careful what you... We also wanted to swap out Lori Lightfoot.
Well, yeah, I know. That was probably a bad move. That was a bad trade.
Anything can happen.
Well, I know. It's not unprecedented. I mean, Roosevelt had a guy. Was it Wendell Willkie? Is that the name? That was his VP guy for 3 years, or three terms, and he pretty much totally ignored it. He didn't like the guy. And then... when it became obvious to everybody, I guess even Roosevelt, that he might not make it through his fourth term, they dumped that guy like a hot rack and brought in Harry Truman, and who Roosevelt probably never even talked to, and didn't even really talk to him after he became VP. But I remember reading in Freedom from Fear, William Kennedy, that, like Truman says, you know, you come to the White House for this meeting. And he goes there and he's saying, how would you like to be the vice presidential nominee? And he's sitting there looking at Roosevelt, who obviously was in really bad shape, and he goes, they're not interviewing me to be VP, they're interviewing me to be president. And what did Roosevelt last in his, was it, he didn't last a year, did he?
No.
He had some kind of, I mean, the guy's blood pressure was what, 240 over 150 or something?
Yeah, there was some serious pressure, job pressure at that point.
Well, he also, I mean, the polio and all the other stuff all those years, it was, actually, what he had, and I'm a doctor, it wasn't the standard polio that kids get. There's another name for it. It was something different. He didn't get it till he was older, because he was in the Navy.
Because he was in good shape.
Oh, matter of fact, he was a big time swimmer. He swam from one island. You know, I'm not a Nantucket kind of guy. We're not Cape Codders, you and I. But if you're out there, anyway, he swam from one island to the other. It's like 2-3 miles, and then he got out. And he got out of the water and had a chill, and by Sunday he was paralyzed.
Oh.
And he was I'm going to say 35. He wasn't like he was 18. Because he had been in the Navy for a while. He was governor of New York. Was he the police chief in New York? Or something. I mean, I don't know.
I thought he was sick for a long time.
He was, but he didn't get it. You know what? Why don't you Google that? When did Roosevelt come down with polio? Because he was in the Navy and everything. Regular.
Right.
Before he was... I'm going to say he was at least 30 when he got it. That's
Sounds
why
like a good question for AI.
Yeah. AI.
How about it says Clyde? He died in January 6, 1919.
1919. Born in 1919. When was he born?
Or no, April 12th, 1945.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1919 was
so
Teddy Roosevelt.
He was in office for, when were they used to get inaugurated in March in those days? So he got inaugurated in March and he was already dead in April? No, he must have got, when he first got elected the first time, the election was in November and he didn't get inaugurated until March. I'll bet that now it's January, right? I don't know when that changed. Maybe it changed when he was in there. But anyway, yeah, he was, it should say in there somewhere, when he contracted polio. I think he was in his...
21, it says. Or he suffered paralytic illness at 19... Yeah, it was years before, in what you're saying about one day he was just paralyzed.
Yeah, it was two days. And he ended up going to all these... He got his whole upper body back, and he kept going to these retreats. People would go with the warm waters. He went somewhere in Alabama, and he would be there for like months, you know, every day doing the rehab and the hot springs and that kind of stuff. I mean, it was different world medicine-wise. I mean, in a lot of ways, just about every way. Anyway, but when he would give a speech, he would stand holding on to like a couple of bars for like the whole part of the speech. The guy was absolutely strong as an axe, upper body.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just stand there. He's a huge man, upper body. Anyway, interesting days. But, hey, what's going on in the futures world? We got the weather right now. The crops are okay, right?
Yeah, crops are doing okay. The winter wheat is harvesting, and we've got the row crops are planted. So now it's a weather game.
Now, when are we... trades in Minnesota, or is it trade here? It trades here, right?
Well, define here. Everything now, Minneapolis, and everything's kind of linked to here because the Board of Trade and CME own the exchange.
Well, so they own everybody now.
So it's added to the monopoly, but most of it's online anyway, so even if you go there, it's not like...
But traditionally, the winter wheat was in Chicago and the summer wheat was in Minneapolis. Is that the way it went?
We have the soft red here, and they've got the
called? Is that
hard. What's the Minneapolis Grain Exchange is the one that's the other.
For those that don't know, I mean, and I'm not an expert, that's why we have Greg here. The winter wheat is actually planted like in the fall, and it comes up in the spring, and it's ready to go about. In May, right?
I think they might almost be as old as the Board of Trade.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Board of Trade opened miraculously like the same year as the I&M Canal, correct?
18... No. Well, I don't know. What do you define as the egg and butter or the Board of Trade? Or
well, the egg and butter was the Merck.
Yeah.
What was the egg and butter that became the Merck?
Right. Minneapolis is hard red, and that's spring wheat. And what's CME is the soft red.
Well, the message I'm trying to tell here is if you're going to trade one of these things, you got to know what you're trading because they're different. Those are two separate crops. There's only one corn crop right here. Then you've got Brazil and you've got other places. But here there's one corn crop.
Kansas correct? City wheat is different too.
Right.
I think in Kansas City, that's part of CME. Okay. So that's hard red.
But one's summer and one's winter. Somebody's winter.
Kansas City is winter.
All right. Because, you don't get as much in the summer crop, do you, as you do in the winter crop? I don't think. I don't know why.
I think that's just because of acreage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because some people try and put don't if you have a corn, can't you put some kind of a string bean crop in before the corn if you want to, or before the soybeans and plant the soybeans after?
So the farmers usually rotate their crops to avoid depleting the soil. They want to maintain biodiversity inside the soil. So yeah, they will do different cover crops or different crops. They rotate them.
Well, isn't the main thing is that corn is a taker from the soil, right? You got to use all kinds of fertilizer. Where soybeans actually is additive to the soil, I believe.
Corn definitely you usually use more.
So if you try and do corn,
if you do it
3-4 years in a row, you got to use a boatload of fertilizer.
Right, right.
But if you do corn 2 years and soybeans one, soybeans give back a lot of what corn took. Correct.
Yeah. Well, yes. It's not as taxing on the soil.
So yes.
So like, what you do is try to do some cover or watercress or something that will die and go back into the soil and create more biodiversity.
Well, it puts the nitrogen back in.
Right.
Because corn is really a draining crop on soil.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that is about.
Lots of energy.
When people see corn, they think, your barbecue sweet corn. But I think all sweet corn has to be...
Animal feed is what we're talking about, at least here.
Well, all sweet corn has to be harvested by hand, right?
For, I don't know, the consumption rules are different.
Well, I mean, I know, what's his name? Chris used to go down to, some of the farms. He knew all these farmers. And they would go down there for the food depository. They'd bring down, 3 or 4 people with Suburbans or Tahoes or pickup trucks. They would actually go out, they'd put the netting on them so they don't get eaten alive by mosquitoes. And they'd go out and you actually have to pick. Like a farmer might have, a square mile of corn, maybe 2 rows of it is sweet corn. Or 3, because that's just for people, for the farm stand. I mean, all the rest of the stuff is all harvested by tractor and all that, by combine and everything.
Yeah, but it is possible to have the combine pick up sweet corn. It's not like it's special.
Well, but you're not going to pick it off as ears. You know what I'm saying? The other stuff grinds everything all up, and you come out of it with just the corn itself.
Right.
But we had a client here at PTI that had a farm in Indiana, and guess what kind of corn he grew? And my brother Dan, who's really good at this, they would always figure out what ratio that they wanted to do to hedge corn, because guess what kind of corn he grew? There's only maybe there's one spot in Indiana that grows this stuff.
Is it feed corn?
Popcorn.
Popcorn.
Mm. Popcorn is like a strain of corn.
Oh.
And these guys grew popcorn, and they Rittenbacker was their big customer, or somebody was.
It sounds like a great customer then.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, he had all the big. Well, I mean, there aren't a whole lot of people that grow, I don't think, popcorn corn. But he would. He'd always be hedging it, and it's not the same grade, obviously, as regular corn. So he and Dan would always be sitting there figuring, okay, how many do we do? Maybe we should do some puts instead of selling the futures. And they would come up with a plan, and I think the guy died or something. And I don't know who ended up with the farm, but we haven't heard from him in ages. But no, we were doing that for a long time for the dude.
Popcorn.
Yeah. I mean, and I, he did pretty well. I don't, I don't, you know, I, I have no idea where you buy the seeds for popcorn, if it's a certain climate. I mean, I don't know anything about this. Liam would know all about this stuff. But, everybody's different, right? I mean, it's like doing somebody's portfolio, and you and I are always talking about. And there are no two people alike. I mean, the last couple people that I have talked to, I mean, one is somebody who's involved in a big estate, wants to protect this, protect that. I kind of wish if I did it all over again, I would be the Fisher investment guy. No matter who you are, we only want to deal with the 80% of the people that are regular. And when I say regular, similar. And by the way, you're putting all your money in this fund, that fund, that fund, and see ya. We'll talk to you next year. You know, we did.
Hopefully, it's got some diverse.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully.
Whatever it is. I mean, now you don't have diversity. You want to just be in the 5-6 stocks. They go up every day. Anything else doesn't go anywhere. The last couple of weeks, right?
And the 5-6 stocks have taken over the index.
Yeah, they've taken over the index totally. So,
that's to the benefit now.
Well,
so.
I'm going to ask you. Oh, we got to wrap it up here, but after break, let's talk about it. Is it possible that instead of guys like me talking about how narrow it is and how every time that happens the market's kind of in danger, and historically, is it different this time? Are these guys going to be the 10 stocks that are left in the world, or if you had, say, 25 of them, put Adobe in there, put few other in there, are they going? Everybody else is going to be gone 10 years from now. I mean, the market's sort of telling you that. I don't, they could be right. SP futures down 1, NASDAQ futures up 30. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, in Northbay Stacks and Jacks, I'm Tom Howell. Greg Pappas in the studio, Matt Byrne on the board. Greg was just saying that Broadcom is up $60. Every stock that's part of the 7 or 8 or 10 or maybe, say, 20, every one of those stocks now, whether they've had earnings or whatever, has had a huge jump in valuations. Every what people think are survivor, or Oracle was up 15% too. They're all up like 15% in the last 2 weeks, right, Greg? It's pretty scary. I mean, S&P futures down 2, NASDAQ futures up 28, Dow futures down 55. Notable stocks in the Dow are Apple's up 132. Like I said, we've got nobody's really down here, so I don't see why the future is down, but it is. We got IBM down 50 cents. That's not going to cut it. We've got Amazon down 60 cents. So, I mean, it's a real slow morning here on top, except for what appears Broadcom. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 712, 1.8%. None of that's flowing over here. Hang Seng's only down 5, call that flat. Shanghai down 16, which is 0.6%. Hong Kong stocks evidently were down a bunch last night and turned around and finished almost unchanged. So maybe we're trading that and not the Nikkei, which must have closed earlier or something. But anyway, Nikkei down 2% almost. We're in Europe. These guys were all down on Friday. We were not. DAX today up 28.1%. FTSE down 1%. Call that flat. Kekaran up 0.3%. This is the one, Greg. These guys have been down like all week after the Macron government seems to be falling apart. But they managed to make a stand today. So they're.
I'm not a buyer, that's for sure.
No. On Friday, again, we had the Dow was down 57, S&P down 2, NASDAQ was up 21. NASDAQ just cannot go down. Bonds, 10-year up 3 basis points, 4.25. The Bund up 5 basis points, 2.40. Japan still unchanged, 0.93. They got up to what? 1.1, and now they're back down to 0.93. Oil up 15 cents, but still really sleepy here between this 77 to 79.5, 80 number. Brent up 16 cents, 82.78. Natural gas down 5 cents, 282. It topped out over 3. RBOB up a penny, 241. Gold down 12.80, 23.36 after trying to rally on Friday. Silver down 12 cents, 29.34. So its brief move over 30 was so far short lived. Copper down 6 cents, 4.42. We've got the US dollar still up a little bit. It's actually down a hair today, but it's 107. It was 108 for quite a while against the euro. British pound, it's 126.7. It was 127.8 for like a long time. So, dollar a little bit of move up last week. Crypto down 722, 65,794. A long wave now from being over 70,000 like it was a week ago. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, a lot of stuff. Well, you see the guy missed a putt on the 18th hole in U.S. Open. Ouch.
I did not know. That sounds pretty brutal. Well, yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:37 a.m. on June 17th, 2024. Weather in Chicago, 78 degrees this morning. It'll be a breezy, though hot and humid day with lots of sunshine. High of 94 degrees today. Down in Phoenix, 82 degrees right now. Very warm and very sunny with a high of 106 today. Wow. In the MLB yesterday, Cubs lost their home game against the St. Louis Cardinals. Final score was 2-1. White Sox lost to Diamondbacks 5-12. And tonight, Cubs are back to play San Francisco Giants at 7:05 right here in Chicago. The NHL Stanley Cup Final is taking place on Tuesday night. Game 5 takes place tomorrow. Edmonton Oilers have been facing off against the Florida Panthers, with Florida leading at 3-1. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
What is the idea of having Florida have the best hockey team?
It doesn't make much sense, does it?
No, it's kind of odd in that regard. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
Yeah, we do indeed.
John, how are you?
Good. Morning.
What's the word? You and I read something last week, and I didn't send it around, but I was going to run it by you and Greg. That if you just somebody's talking about the economy, you know, market obviously has been strong, and well, the Nasdaq certainly has been strong. Rest of the market really not so much. I mean, last week we had a couple days where the Nasdaq was up 2%, and the Russell was down 1.5%, which is, you know, it's not so unusual that it never happens, but it's odd when it's more than 1 or 2 days in a row. I don't know that you can trade on it necessarily, except you wish you were long one and short the other, but that's easy to say when the day's over, right, Greg? It's not as easy to say before the opening.
Armchair trader.
Oh God, yeah. Well, we all are, aren't we? Everybody knows everything now. I mean, it's the world, and you can say whatever you want, and you know. But anyway, somebody had an article regarding, if you really looked at every bank right now, how many of them, if you looked at the commercial loans and some of the bonds they bought from the government and where they're marked, what huge, not a huge, I don't know if it's 90, but some significant percentage of them are technically bankrupt.
Or yeah, they're zombies.
They're zombies. And now, that term is a little bit misleading because you can be a zombie bank. I mean, if a bank has an investment, and this is what happened to Japanese banks. I mean, for those that don't know, if you listen to the show, you probably should know. But the U.S., one of the few things I think that is really positive in this country, even though they wandered off the reservation a couple times, stock and companies is never really considered a good capital in a bank, right, guys? Where in Europe,
right,
it always has been. And I think in Japan it always has been. So in other words, if a bank in Europe owns, you know, 20,000 shares of NVIDIA, I think that's considered good capital. Well, here it's not. Okay, the only thing here that's considered good capital, I believe, now, used to be Fannie and Freddie Preferred. How'd that work out, John? Not so good. Because all that stuff went out sort of worthless when the government took over Fannie and Freddie. And even though they've made so much money now, since then, they refuse to kick anything back to the original shareholders, do they? Stock still trades, doesn't it, Greg? Like someday that's going to happen, but boy, I don't know, but it's a pipe dream. Anyway, so U.S. bonds are considered good capital, but people that bought the bonds when they were 1.5%, especially if you bought the 30-year variety, are now worth a lot less than they bought them. So even though they're quote, good, if you wait it out another 27 years, or 7 years, if it's a 10-year, right now they're marked a lot lower. And commercial real estate, I mean, nobody ever, you are supposed to, I'm not asking you the banking rules that much, John, but you know better than me. What, how often or when are you supposed to write down a property? When obviously it's, I mean, because you're supposed to write down your consumer credit stuff fairly quickly, right? In other words, if you start getting 5% people reneging on their credit cards versus 3%, probably in the next quarter you're going to say something about that, right? But now commercial loans, is it, when do you do commercial loans? Kind of when the newspapers force you to, or is there a schedule to it, or what?
Well, you know, their maturity dates are different. You know, they tend to be short-term loans compared to, say, consumer loans or home mortgages. So they, you know, are not designed to be, say, you know, 4, 5, 6 beyond that years. So you know, the urgency of having to liquidate, especially if you have to pay off depositors, and this is the thing, Tommy, I think every bank is potentially a zombie bank when there's no confidence in the system, because there's no bank that's got enough, certainly not enough reserves, but not enough liquid assets to satisfy all the creditors if they make demands all at once. So you know, all banks are...
Well, yeah, are you're, if you did that, there'd never be a loan.
Right, right. And so it's based on confidence. It's not based on balance sheet. You know, no bank, I think, really can satisfy these people in a run situation, to use that horrible word. But this is, you know, the commercial stuff tends to be on a short fuse. So when banks are forced to write it down, it's because, you know, they've got a couple of these things. They're all hitting within the next so many months or whatever, and they're going to take a huge hit. You know, they know that the bank, you know, the loan isn't performing, or it's, you know, it's had some delinquencies, or, you know, they've had to step in and seek, you know, some kind of help on it because they're not getting, you know, timely payments, and the prospect is not improving for a lot of these loans. So I think banks that are heavily into commercial real estate, you know, mortgages or, you know, packaged securities of these things, have, you know, a kind of, you know, worry factor that the smaller banks do not. And I think this is going to kind of show up in the next 6 months to a year, where a lot of these loans that are now coming due are causing, you know, a scramble to either save what you can of your equity in the property, take a stake in it as a manager, or to get other people to come in and bail you out. But the problem still is that these properties are so below what, you know, the debt is that's being carried on them when it comes to resale value, that they're all going to be in trouble. Every bank at some level, whether they actually have these mortgages in their portfolio or not, they're all going to be affected by this.
Well, I know sometimes we get accused of the show being a tad Chicago-centric, but I think and this real estate stuff, I think this is happening more than in Chicago. Clearly, it's a New York issue, right? I don't know if it's so much in L.A. or Denver or somebody issue, but it's not just here. But if you could take us, Jan, through it, if you went back, 50 years or so, I'm going to say that the mortgage at whatever something South LaSalle probably was held by Continental Bank or First National Bank or could even been an Exchange National. Somebody would have that property and it probably was very highly performing and everything else. But let's say now there's these consortiums that put these loans together. There might be a bank involved pretty heavily. There might not be. You don't really know who the players are necessarily, right? I mean, who the real money is behind this stuff. You know the management company's name, but you don't know where the mortgage or whatever. But because I know some of these buildings here, because we were in them, the numbers are, let's say 175. Okay, those guys paid. The original guys were a bunch of diamond guys from New York. They bought the place kind of for a song because it was Class B. And the government had to, like, the U.S. of A. government had their Social Security in there on a couple floors paying like $3 a foot. So they immediately pulled everybody out of there a year or two before the lease was even up and went to the Dirksen building or someplace paying $29 a foot. And that's your government at work. They actually had the alcohol, I don't know if you remember this, Greg, alcohol, tobacco, firearms were in there, and they had holding cells for people. They would bring prisoners in there at night and put them in a cell in the building that we were in. It was strange stuff. Anyway, those guys bought the place, put $100 million into the place. They covered over the these buildings that were like a whole square block. The whole building wasn't just solid. I mean, the people on the inside had windows, too. They were going onto a courtyard. Well, the energy drain from those things was tremendous, so these guys put essentially a glass dome off their two courtyards, which a lot of people have done. Bottom line is, then they sell the place. And I think the next people paid, $200 million or something for it, or $180 or something, Jan, and they put up, say, $40 of capital. So let's use $200 as a round number. They buy it for $200, they put up $40 of their own, and they get a loan for it, $160 from banks or somebody, some combination of people. Now, we don't know exactly what's on the bank's balance sheet. We sure as hell don't know what's on these other people's balance sheet, whether it's BlackRock, whether it's probably not them, but it's people like that, correct? So now all of a sudden, the loan is $160, and you see the place, jabbering about, it's not worth anywhere near there, the place is 40% full, blah, blah, blah. So now the guys who put up the 40 say, I'm out, it's yours. So their 40's gone, but their 40, might have been cash, might have been something. So then now we're down to the 160, and the thing goes out for auction, and they can puke it out for 90, which is kind of what's happening, right? So now we've got another 70 someplace. Now, where along the chain, say it's a bank or a bank has half of it. I don't think many banks have all of it anymore, do they? But say a bank has half of it. Well, let's say they have all of it. So now there's 160 and they sit there and go, wait a minute, this doesn't look so hot.
The insurance company.
Yeah, these guys, whatever, some insurance company probably is. Yeah, you're right. There's a bunch of people that are involved in this stuff. Might be a university fund.
CalPERS.
Pension fund, foreign government.
Could be Northwestern, could be Notre Dame, could be anybody. So now all of a sudden somebody recognizes 160 is not the number. Now, does somebody call them up, send them all a letter, form a letter saying, by the way, we think at the very best this thing's now worth 120. So if I were you, I would pull your loan down 25%, like right now today. Does that letter go out, Jan, or doesn't it? Or people just hope, and then the day that it sells at, say, 80, everybody's got to write it down 50%, right? Because they only got 50% of the money back. But is there something that goes? Go ahead.
They go to committees. This becomes the kind of the negotiating process where you look at the reality of what you're going to get at the end if things go according to the way things are going, where you're not going to have any kind of resale value that's going to make anybody whole. So you all agree on how much of a haircut to take. And going forward, you find some way to salvage as much of the equity as you can. And in times like this, there seems to be no bottom to where that floor is. I'm just staggered by how small some of these sales amounts are for these buildings that are put up for auction, given what's owed on them. So that shows, you know, this proportionate loss to all these lenders, where they're going to have to take a write down on these going forward. And if enough of those happen within a short time frame, it's bad enough that freezes their ability to lend money that they don't have anymore. So that kills construction and, rehabbing and everything else. But it turns these properties into such white elephants. There's no way that people are really in a position to make them ever profitable again. When we're talking like maybe 10, 20 years down the road, they have to carry these things before things bounce back. And I don't think lenders have that kind of window. They don't have that kind of patience for what they're trying to do. Nobody does. So this is, we're in such uncharted territory now, where a whole class of collateral, the office building in a central city urban district has become, an absolute, white elephant. Nobody ever saw this coming to that extent, or that it would be happening in all these markets. And it's not just the United States either. But it's kind of, the function of urban planning, where you have these kind of centers that were competing for workers and tenants all at the same time. And when there was a steady flow of them and there was a free market, it worked pretty well. But come the lockdowns and everything else, and it's a whole new ballgame now. We're in very uncharted territory.
Well, if you look at the amortization schedule, though, I mean, if you're borrowing, 80% of it, that means that your total cost over however many years, if you go 30 years, it's going to be about double. So, I mean, your interest is going to equal more than whatever you're paying.
Well, that's true, but I don't think these loans are, amortized in that sense, over a 30-year period.
Don't a lot of the expenses and write-offs occur within the first few years?
You can only write off if you make money.
Oh, that's true. Well, you can write off expenses.
Against what? If there's not enough income.
It doesn't come as a loss?
Well, yeah.
Well, if you've got, 50 buildings or whatever, and you take a loss on a couple.
Well, yeah, if the queen had balls, she'd be king, right?
if she had wheels, she would have been a bike.
Yeah. I'm saying you're right.
If you were expecting, however long and to get double the, or at least equal amount of interest, so what? You sell it at a loss.
But what I'm saying. The people that put in the 40, they're gone. I mean, they said it's yours. So, but still, a loss of 40 is a real number. That'll leave a mark.
That's the bank is, because their interest, they're just losing interest. If they ditch the asset within the first however many years, the payer was paying for that anyway.
Yeah, but the bank,
the risk wasn't as much with the bank.
Stop it. Well, look at how a bank works. If in a normal world, Greg puts his $2 million in the bank, they're paying you interest for that money, correct? Say they're paying you 3.5%, 4%, whatever it is. They're turning around and putting that out as a mortgage for 7.
Okay, right.
Now, so with the 3.
So if I don't have
but the 3 is they're paying salaries, they're paying for billing, they have overhead. So you can't just say, oops, they got their 7. They didn't really get their 7 because they had to pay for the stuff to get the 7. You know what I'm saying? So you can't just say it's all
about. I think it depended a lot upon when it goes south, because if you've got, call it 5 years or 10 years worth of wiggle room in the beginning,
you're still cooked.
20% is mainly paid by the down payment. It looks bad on paper.
Well,
but
that's my point. Is these places, the idea of somebody putting $40 million down on a $200 million building, is the people that put up the 160, they say, well, God, the thing can't be. They can't be worth less than 160 a few years from now. Hell, that's 20% less. So that's they have their buffer. What I'm saying, then the guy who put up the 40 says, you don't have me to kick around anymore. I'm gone. Now my question maybe to Greg here.
Their buffer is huge because not well, only
it,
do they get
thought
the,
it was.
Well, yeah, but not only do they get the 20% down, but anything that they've paid really to date is majority interest.
Okay.
So
maybe you got to stop thinking like that because
oh no,
because the they're in an intermediary game. It's not Greg Pappas plunking down 160 mil out of the bank, getting interest for 5 years and saying, "Well, at least I got my interest." But you could have gotten, you're getting seven there. You could have got five right now at a T-bill. So you have your opportunity cost. You can't just say you got your seven. You know what I'm saying?
Well, opportunity cost meaning opportunity is, everybody's got opportunity costs. The thing is with them, they got somebody else to cover not only the first, but they also get whatever. Like in terms of dollars, they're not that big of a loser for five or ten years.
How can a guy my age ever have a conversation with somebody under the age of 40 about implied interest and how all these things come together and you can't think like that? It's impossible. I never win any argument. and yet, you know. I mean, anyway, my question to you, Greg, is you're in a building that's kind of in this situation. I won't name it. Now, use my same numbers. Original number, 40 mil, they put down to get a loan for 160, and now the thing gets puked somewhere at 80. I guess my question is, how much of that is just the building is worth that much less? John, you answer this too. How much of it is in the last 3 or 4 years, before you finally puke it out, you've let the maintenance go down to where you need 10 or 20 just to get it back up to where it was? Because obviously these buildings that are sold have huge maintenance to them. How much of it is deferred maintenance and how much of it is loss, I guess, is my question. I mean, if the place was kept up perfectly, would it still go for 100 instead of 80 or 90 instead of 80? And you're in a building kind of like that. Have they let upkeep slide or no?
One of the, you know, the problem is the income stream at these properties is so reduced that you can't, you know, put money aside for repairs or cover, you know, day-to-day expenses such that you can attract, you know, new tenants who are, you know, flush and have money to throw around to a lot of different kinds of landlords. So as the vacancy rate increases in these buildings, it's not like you're going to have a fleet of cleaning people or maintenance people or electricians going through the place all the time looking for things that need to be done. You'll have whole floors that are neglected and are filthy and, you know, stuff doesn't work. And there's no reason to spend a lot of money to bring it up to snuff because there's nobody who's going to be renting that space for the foreseeable future.
Well, that's what I meant. How do you put a number on that? I mean,
pretty easy.
Well, the lenders put the direst possible cast on this because once they take over a property, regardless of how much of the loan was performed or, you know, whatever covenants were kept, the lender is now forking up money, you know, out the wazoo at a fantastic rate, which is not how lenders make money. So they're assuming the real estate taxes, they're assuming the maintenance costs, they're assuming all the burdens of ownership that, you know, and this is why they have an owner to do this, and they just, you know, take the mortgage payments and the interest and they're happy. But now there's nothing to protect them from the vagaries of the market. So it's a hemorrhaging asset at whatever stage they take it over. No matter how, you know, much equity there may be, you know, whatever happens going forward now is just a drain on the bank.
Well, I mean, these buildings are, if you've never been in one of these things in these downtown areas, I mean, especially, 175, Greg, the thing is a square block. These are massive buildings. So I'm going to say they have, 20 elevators? And let's be simple. Even if you're on the best schedule, they all have to be totally redone every 20 years, right? So if you do it right, you're doing one a year, which probably costs, you know, some huge amount of money. Well, if you're only half full, I don't think anybody's going to say, we can't make it with 19 elevators the next year or 18 or 17. So if somebody actually wants to put everybody back in the building, I'll bet there's huge amounts of money that has to be spent to get these places up to be able to be full capacity, right?
Oh, sure. And you know, and then think about all the things that have to be done when it comes to, you know, just look at something like the ADA requirements for getting people in and out of public spaces. and the constant attention to detail and remodeling that has to, you know, be done in order to keep these properties in compliance. That's an open-ended commitment, you know, with no, you know, cap on the price tag, really. If the windows start to fall out, if the boiler breaks down, if, you know, the cornice cracks and kills a couple pedestrians, all this stuff, you know, you would like there to be prophylactic maintenance and make sure that somebody's looking out for it. But when in a building, you know, that's been run into the ground now because they can't attract new tenants and there's no money left over to do anything in the way of you know, preventative maintenance, you're going to have all sorts of crumbling facades and crumbling interiors that then, of course, translate to further unrentable space until somebody comes in with a boatload of cash, reverses trend. And there's not enough money around to do that for more than a couple buildings at a time.
Greg, in the building you're in, what if I showed up in the law firm, you know, Dewey, Cheatham & Howe, and I say, hey, give me 5 floors of the Amex and 2 of the other building.
Chief, chief, and chief.
Chief, chief, and chief. I like the Three Stooges, Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. What do you suppose, on one hand, they'd be happy as a clam. On the other hand, they'd say, holy bleep. How do we get 5 floors ready to go? How long would it take them?
I think a lot of what happened, at least in the building that I'm in, was depreciation considerations and historic building considerations, city grants you're seeing right now.
Yeah.
All the stuff that you can kind of... And I'm sure it'll benefit from whatever redevelopment they're doing around, but it's more about the tax implications and the depreciation, more so, and written against the rest of their portfolio, more so than anything of a good idea, or it's just part of a bigger strategy.
It's astounding to me that don't always assume that people have this, you know, this huge trove of profit someplace to write this stuff up against.
Well, if you're able to drop, you know, 200 some million dollars on the building, you got to have some profit somewhere.
Well, one might think, what if you got 5 buildings like that? You could piss away a lot pretty quick if you start dropping 160 a building.
Yeah, yeah. But again, if you do the allocation right, hopefully that's not your
Well, yeah, if you do everything right, you always have a profit, but it doesn't always work that way, just saying.
Yeah,
SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures up 25. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
We hear very little, and we understand even less.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howard. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures down 275. NASDAQ Futures up 26. Greg just corrected me. There has been a unanimous first round selection. Mariano Rivera, correct, Greg?
Yeah. Yeah.
But isn't it stunning? They're probably dead. Maybe they're not. Who the hell voted against Tom Seaver, Willie Mays? I mean, for God's sake, much more do you expect out of somebody?
Ty Cobb received 222 of 226.
So who would vote? I mean, nobody liked the
received guy. 215 out of 226.
Now who would vote against Babe Ruth?
More people than Ty Cobb.
Yeah. Plus, everybody liked Babe Ruth. Nobody liked Ty Cobb.
Honus Wagner received 95%. He tied with Ruth.
There had to be somebody voted negative on all these guys. Must be the same people. Honus Wagner could have been, you know, he's one of the... I don't know who we even think would be the top... I have a good one here that I will dig out for you guys. Since we are Stocks and Jacks, the... where is it here? I think I have it somewhere in my emails here, but the best hitting duos that ever played together with each other, and let me see if I have it here. I'll see if I can find it. But the number one hitting duo, I don't know where I lose everything here, but was by far Ruth and Gehrig. Then the second was Willie Mays and Willie McCovey. Well, I remember seeing those.
What's the criteria?
This when just a 10-year span or 5-year span of people who the highest WAR for two people or highest hitting for two people or whatever it was.
Oh.
Something along those lines.
So if you got one hitting 60 home runs and the other hitting 50 home runs, yeah.
Yeah, here's the one. Every once in a while you see something, a name you never even... again, I get addicted to this Cora thing. There's a name that I don't even realize. Which Major League player, a surefire Hall of Famer, missed out due to military service?
Willie McCovey, Willie Mays.
Then it was, who was?
Mickey Mantle.
Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews.
Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews, yeah, combined. Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews, 863 home runs.
That's kind of a lot. You know that the duo that played more games together in history of baseball?
The most games together?
Yep.
No.
Don't go too far from Chicago. Well, for 2 or 3 years, Maris and Mantle were pretty good on the hitting part.
Right.
Billy Williams and Rand Sano.
Oh.
They played, 10 or 12 years together? Which is pretty rare. Anyway, here's a name that I never even heard of. There's a Washington Senators shortstop named Cecil Davis. 3-time All-Star, 1,397 hits by age 27. That's kind of a lot. Wow. He had 359, 218 hits in his 1941 last season.
Before Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Shortstop, second base.
Oh yeah, yeah. Those guys are terrific. And Cecil, Alan Trammell was a great player. Cecil Davis, the guy, then he went to... got in a war and got a bunch of injuries and couldn't play anymore. So they got a .327 lifetime batting average. Now the question is he ever going to get to Cooperstown? So far, he is not. I would think that on war injuries, you might want to make a spot for him. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, you would think so. You got some veterans' preference points or something.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, a lot of guys, kind of a weird personal interest story, but my uncle got killed in World War II. Of course, I never met him. And I never knew anything about him, but one day I went to a funeral of the person who stood up in my parents' wedding, of his mother, and I got to talk to all these guys. And they said, "Oh yeah, your uncle, he might have been a short second baseman on the Sox. He was that good." Well, how do you know how good? What happened to all these people that didn't get wiped out in these wars, Jen? I mean, it's pretty scary when you think about it. I mean, the human toll. I mean, Just look at the people that are getting wiped out in Russia and Ukraine. I mean, on both sides. Nobody care about that. I mean, I think when you get older, you think more about this stuff. They're not just numbers. They're people. Just saying. So what the...
Yeah, I...
Go ahead. I mean, I
kind of... Well, I mean, I've been, you know, working on a family tree for a long time, and I'm continually going off in directions I didn't know about as I discovered people or marriages or whatever throughout the family. And I'm always struck at how frequently I find, you know, an individual who, you know, served in the military, was killed, and you start digging into that person's life. I never knew this person existed. I never knew there was such a person in the family. And you begin to see, you know, from looking at their earlier life, the kind of potential, you know, the things that were written about them, or, you know, sport records in high school or whatever, things like that, that, you know, nobody knew at the time that this was going to be their only claim to fame, because their lives would be snuffed out, you know, before long. And you just think of the waste and the loss to the profession, the loss to families, earning power, intelligence, everything that these people take with them.
Yeah, I mean, you look at just how that stuff goes. But I want to get back to my, I keep jumping all over the place, but the part about the market and these places are losing money, and the things going on in the middle market, and maybe the banks being in trouble. We had the big debate discussion with Carl on Friday, and you know, when you're managing money for people or whatever, or what you're doing, and you think things have patterns from the past, and all of a sudden they don't necessarily appear. I mean, in my mind, this craziness of the 5 and 6 stocks, which I've seen before in 2000 for sure, it happened relatively quickly. I mean, it was a few years there where it just ran up, but it wasn't that many. This has been like longer this time, and it's been seemingly more obvious this time. I never really heard about articles.
More juice from the government.
Oh, that's true. That's absolutely true. But now the question is, can it really be totally different this time? I mean, I didn't see anywhere near the advantages of the stocks that were in 2000, if I can remember the stocks. Help me out here, Jen. Was it Oracle, Microsoft, Cisco, Dell?
Dell's back, baby.
Dell's back.
Dell's back.
Dell's back.
What he just dumped $700 and some million worth of his stock. That was huge.
Well, he took it private, then he came back out. So that's one's a hard one to kind of gauge. But the rest of them, was it Cisco, Oracle, Intel? What the hell was the sixth? Whatever. But there was another one in there, and they were nowhere near as favored kind of by the government as the ones now. So, I mean, my question is, I look at these stocks all of a sudden in the last 3 weeks, they're all valued 15 to 20% higher than they were 4 months ago. Now, normally, you would say, wait a minute. But it's been happening so long now, and my question with Carl is, is it always going to end that way for those stocks, or are there fundamental changes in society, in the business, in the governmental largesse to those places? Because guess what? When I was over lecturing in Germany in 1991, I looked around me. I don't know how efficient those places were. It seemed like every industry had their favored 4 people, and every industry, maybe not even 4, 2 or 3 or 1, with the nose up the ass of government, and they're still there. So, I mean, I guess my question is, will
Halliburton, Boeing, Raytheon, and Lockheed.
Yeah, but they're not anywhere near the multiples that your Nvidia and your, what was the one last week, Adobe, these other things. I guess my question is there a chance that Carl's totally wrong, and that there's no comeuppance ever in value, that they are the people that are left? That 20 years from now, it's only going to be Home Depot and maybe Lowe's there, just so they say they have a pet puppy on the side. You know, in the Midwest, you might have a Menards every now and then. But is it going to become so concentrated that people wonder what Carl and I are talking about? Why do these places have to go down? They're the only places. Remember, when I say go down, I mean be valued what most people would say differently. Go ahead, Greg, you first.
I love Home Depot. Okay. I will never talk poorly against Home Depot.
Okay, but I mean, do you love it? It's $3.44. As a retailer, it's got tremendous high PE. Do you love it if 700, 800, 2,000. I mean, what's the number?
It's like trading 23 or so PE.
Which is incredible for a retailer.
Yeah. And, I mean, they pay out and they make it. And I don't know.
What do they pay out? What's their dividend rate? Nothing.
I mean, up here, it's probably half of what the market is. They try to pay. I'd imagine it used to be right around what the 1 or 2 year was, but up here it's got to be 2.5%.
But I'm going to take the under on that. A huge under on that.
What do they pay?
Yeah, I'm going to take the huge under on.
It's like $9. I don't know what the stock is.
All right, let's find out.
$3.50. So two.
I don't. Do they even make $9?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Just asking. I mean,
When you make $4 a quarter, it's
what is the PE ratio for Home Depot? 22.5.
Yeah,
that's like double any retailers historically.
Yeah, but they're
I'm not saying it's too high. I'm just saying that's what it is. I mean, and a lot of them are there now. But the question is, why?
Home Depot has beaten the crap out of S&P also since the '90s.
All right, I understand that. My point is.
Will they ever turn around? Yeah, when one of the guys dies and they lose their culture and they, you know, just like everything else, it's all about the people in charge.
They pay $10 a year. $9 a year.
They pay that, but they make probably 16 or 20.
All right. So my question is, are all the people all the years that had PE ratios for retailers in the 10-12 range, were they all idiots? Or is there something special about Home Depot that they control the world? They can. I guess what I'm really asking is, no matter how bad it gets for anybody else, if prices go up 8%, can they raise their prices 12% and be immune to anything that happens? And the answer could be yes. By the way, What do you think, Jen?
I see places like Home Depot, Amazon, a lot of places as intermediaries who are really in the delivery end of the industry, they control production, I think, to some extent, just like Sears or lots of other retailers used to. But Sears, built appliances. They built houses. They did a lot of things besides just take cash and ship something to people based on their catalog description. But something like Home Depot and Amazon and Walmart, all these places now have become incredibly wealthy and powerful. Not on their ability to create anything or even to stimulate growth, but to completely control the way the stuff passes through the market. And, this is something that's, I think, going to become increasingly concentrated in fewer and fewer operations. And it's just like, the drift towards, intellectual property as some kind of, commodity or thing when it really is not that thing. It's not like other things in the history of human production or mercantile behavior. So, something like NVIDIA or artificial intelligence kind of stuff, there's an increasing power vested in fewer and fewer operations to get this stuff spread around, and it's the spreading around that's profitable.
I think I've got an answer to your question, too.
Fire away.
Oh, well, when would I sell is when I start to think people like Arthur Blank, Ken Langone, and those guys are out of power and just some like random corporate kind of MBA type person takes over and then it's gone. Well, the magic is gone. In terms of what NVIDIA, if Jensen Huang or whatever retires, goodbye. It's going to be just like another regular company and they're going to They've just got more money to run through and waste.
Well, John, how can I be? Can I really stick it to Greg here without really sticking it to him? Let's flip the coin around here, Greg. Right? Let's put you in my
just like Tesla.
Listen for a
second.
I'm saying, put yourself in my job, okay? Which is managing money for people, and I get some people who walk in and they go, well, Chief, here's $20 million. I only want a diversified portfolio. I don't want to do any stinking ETFs. I want to do stocks. and I walk in and maybe you're my assistant. I bring you in, sit you next to me so I can, you know, charge more or something. Actually, I don't charge that way, but and so somebody says, I said, well, you know, we think we're gonna pick 20 stocks, and one of them's gonna be Home Depot, and one of them's gonna be Microsoft. Now, there's no question that they've been big winners, all right? And in your generation, all you see them as being winners, and they just are stocks you have to have. All right, what if this client says to you, Mr. Pappas, I see you have Home Depot down here as a buy today. We're with you on the fact that it's been a great investment, but you want me to put essentially $500,000 in this thing today. Okay, they pay a 2.5% dividend yield, which is, you know, all right, but not great. By the way, they have a 22 PE. What the bleep is that for a... And take this Microsoft, for instance. I've got this company at 14 times revenue. There's never been a company that size, that mature, that has traded for that price. Explain to me how you think this thing can grow from here. I'm not saying whether you're right or wrong.
That's like a question that doesn't occur in my mind, because coming from the other side where we just trade, it's what's available. Well, something like a SPY or a VOO exists. You know, we're going to park some money there, so I don't need to think about it. I'm not going to pay the cost in terms of labor with assistance and or whatever, so we just do it that way. But if you actually have to, what should be and what growth rates will be and that kind of stuff, I don't know. We on the other side, we just
What would your question be? I'm giving you my money for 15 years. Tell me how Home Depot is going to double in 10 years. How the hell are you going to do it?
The Home Depot is part of, if I were to construct a portfolio and include Home Depot, the Home Depot, the individual stocks would be maybe 25% of the portfolio rather than the 80%.
I just started this by saying this person wants individual stocks. We're going to pick 20. Now, if we start picking the winners, they're going to be quizzing you on every single one of them. By the way, I would probably pick Home Depot as well, but like how I would answer that question, I'm not sure of exactly.
My 20 stocks would.
Well, you're.
I would say.
I don't even want to hear about them. Good luck. 20 stock.
Yeah.
GameStop.
No, I would say good luck. You know, if you think you could pick the 20, I can't.
But what do you think these people? How many trillions of dollars in this country do you think are in people's funds that are doing just that?
What's the reason they can't pay for ETFs? Is they're too cheap? Or what?
They just want
to buy companies? And
what are you talking about? Do you think Fisher Investments has any ETFs?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I see portfolios coming through potential clients every day. They're in some Merrill Lynch. They're in some Schwab.
And
you know,
those just are their iteration of S&P or
big
whatever,
cap,
right?
No, they're not. They're big cap Bob. They're mid cap Mike. The big cap guy's got... You know, 80
stocks.
Yeah, but
they're a vehicle for them to charge an extra point.
They have 60 stocks in there. Somebody's picking,
and they're getting fees off of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean...
But don't act like it's not being done. That's the lion's share of the investment today.
Well, hats off. I don't know. I don't come from that world, so I don't know.
So here we go, John. We have Greg saying he'd love this stock, and then I'd say, how do you defend it? And he goes, I can't defend it.
Well, I think they make a lot of money.
Well, yeah.
That's the reason I like it. I don't know.
What I said was, this week, this month, yeah, I want to be in the
I think things. It's much safer than something
okay,
else.
But if I were to ask you a simple question, how does Microsoft double? Because they're priced as if they're a growth stock. Are they really? I mean, that's the question. Are they really? How can you be a growth stock that big? Unless everybody else disappears and you're the only one left.
Is Microsoft... Yeah, it's preservation of capital or growth of capital, or that depends on the goal. I mean, I'm not a proponent of just having two or three stocks.
So, John, when you were in school, when you were asked a question, did you just change the question and change the test like the young people do now?
Oh, well, yeah.
All the time. Hey, what kind of question is this? I'd rather answer this one. I got the answer on this one. Sorry,
Greg. You brought that up. Let's talk about something else.
No, I'd rather do kind of what makes sense to me because I know I'll be able to stick to it.
I'd rather answer this question, Prop.
Anybody who thinks that they can pick the top 20, you know, okay, great. I can't help you.
Well, I mean,
if you ask me to pick the top 20, okay, I mean,
so
maybe.
Now, here's where I'm really going to zing you. So if I were to say, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm not capable of doing that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to put your money in QQQ. What am I doing?
So
I'm putting half my money in the same five stocks I just asked you about.
Right, right.
But what's the difference? Or
the difference is the amounts. So
half? That's a lot.
Well, if you go, say, 80% conservative or whatever, call it indexes or market weighted, and then you're really going to outperform or underperform the market with that extra 20%. So assuming you'd like to keep most of your money, you don't want it to be the portfolio to be too exposed to individuals' movements, I guess.
All right, what I'm saying is you're using a half-assed way to get around what's the obvious here. Somehow or another, you have to be, no matter what you do. I talk to people all the time and say, well, you know, I don't like the fact that these stocks are leading the market. How about we do what you like to do, Chief, and let's do the index stuff. Well, it is remiss for me to say, well, gee, Joe, if we pick the Qs, we're putting half our money in the stocks you said you didn't want to be in. And, oh, by the way, if we pick the S&P, it's 40%. So, I mean, you can't get away from it. And that's probably...
Right, so you decline or you decrease your total amount towards the S&P.
Well, okay, but then all of a sudden, then you're not even in the S&P anymore because they are that big in there.
It's all about the size of the position. Not about the individual.
The point is, when stuff gets this concentrated, even the indexes themselves become concentrated. And why do you think these stocks go up every day? Maybe some people really like them at this price. I mean, a lot of people do, obviously. But if somebody every week, you know, let's pick a young John Flanagan, and he's got his 401k, and you contribute $100 a week, without even knowing it, you just put $50 into those stocks. And you might not even like them. But if it's at Vanguard or whatever it is, if it's an S&P 500 fund or whatever it is, you are investing in them. You're the ones driving the stuff up. And you may say, man, I can't stand this friggin' Microsoft. I can't believe they're that big. They're a bunch of crooks, which I don't think they are. But all of a sudden, where are you? You're an investor today. I mean, you really can't get around it, right?
No, the concentration, Tom, is a product of this monopolistic sympathy that you see at all levels, where the markets are a symptom of how healthy it is to have a monopolistic system, and not to muddy the waters and not to encourage competition or imagine a day when Microsoft, is exposed and other people dive in and carve it up do what Microsoft has used government and all sorts of regulatory agencies to prevent from happening long before this. It's we're banking on this kind of protection of a few, corners of the market, and this is what drives a lot of the attractiveness of these things. It isn't that the product or the company or anything else is well run or doing the right thing, but they've been set up as sacred cows, and nobody dare intrude on them.
Well, I mean, everybody knows. I'm not trying to give Greg grief here, but it's very difficult to defend your normal stuff today.
If your timeline is more than 10 or 15 years, it's pretty easy.
You can't.
I mean, if it's not, then you're just sunk. Because, and I don't know what it was in 2000, you got AIG or Johnson & Johnson or Procter & Gamble. What were the biggest ones in 2000?
I just told you. Intel, Oracle, Cisco,
right.
Microsoft.
So those all got whacked. The Qs is still way up, but
But they're not up. The only one.
Right, which is why
15 years for any one of those to get back to their top one. The only one that has is Microsoft. Actually, I think Oracle's above their price now.
Yeah, so, I mean, if your timeline, if you're buying into the weighted or the market cap type program, you got to wait in order for those new ones to come. But by design, there will always be leaders. They just change over the course of a decade.
That's why I prefer indexes, because if the market goes to hell, there's always going to be an S&P 500. Stocks and jacks might be in there, but there's going to be 500 stocks in there, right? An index is not going to go to zero. Or how many stocks have we seen go to zero?
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why I'm in there. I'm just saying, if you really start to defend these numbers right now, it's becoming fairly difficult. Yet everybody wants in. And all I'm saying is that I'm the biggest proponent of indexes. Yet at least I have to say to somebody, gee, Joe, you know, you don't like any of these stocks, but if we buy the Qs, that's what we're really doing. I mean, you gotta at least say that, right?
It's a good disclaimer.
Well, I mean,
why are we losing money? Well, the top five stocks have all gone down.
Well, yeah, I mean, if all of a sudden people start to, something bad happens, which I sure as hell don't want to see. If John, you know, he didn't predict it or anything, but if all of a sudden five banks go under because of consumer or commercial loans or something, I don't predict this at all. But if they did, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody had to puke out their IRA or something, and people started selling the spiders or the Qs, Microsoft could be the best stock on earth. It's going right down whatever his percentage is with the rest of them. I'm trying to get people, I'm not trying to give investment advice. You know I don't. I'm just trying to get as many listeners as possible to understand what the market is right now and what they're actually doing when they're doing it. I mean, I don't know if I'm succeeding or not here, John. What do you think? Probably not. But
yeah, there's still few other options, Tom. I mean, what can you really point to as something that's, you know, likely to be the next big whatever in terms of a Microsoft or Home Depot or Nvidia? You just pick the top six or seven. There's nothing that you could say today has got that kind of growth potential without really sticking your neck out and embarrassing yourself, perhaps. It's just, there's no, you know, percentage in doing that. And the market kind of happily goes along and keeps, you know, the investors happy by showing that these stocks can still perform beyond all expectations. And what, you know, we all hope that continues for the short term and ideally the long term too. So,
well, Greg,
there's a lot riding on that kind of expectation too.
Weren't you working? I mean, my brother, he didn't do this on his own, but, you know, Dan really is good at helping people. He had four or five clients that were really, what was it, Greg, you know more about this than me, was it 4 or 5 years ago, they all wanted to get involved in like a little basket of electronic vehicle stocks, right? And I'm not so sure that thing hasn't done near as well as the other stuff. Now, Greg, you were working on an index you wanted to put together with like 10 stocks in it, trying to find the stocks of the next decade, not the last decade. Are you anywhere along on that, or when you had some people helping?
My index is specifically, it has a certain weight of S&P and a certain weight of bonds.
Okay, so it's not trying to get the stocks.
It varies depending on the VIX.
I mean, but what we want to be able to come together. Maybe Flanagan can do it. We want a 10 stock basket that's going to be Nvidia's, those guys for the next decade, don't we? All 10 of them being big winners. John, can you do that for us?
I wish I could.
Yeah. The best person at that was
my
probably
crystal
Peter
ball's out of commission right now.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to dash off to break here. When we come back, we'll have Nancy. John, you can hang around.
Yeah, sure thing.
SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures up 17. So we're kind of right where we've been all morning, quiet. We've got, the holiday on Wednesday. So it's kind of a slow time of the year. We'll see if it stays that way. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification,
or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single-family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This is a true sad story for ADT, the leader in home security systems. My favorite dog, Oliver, was stolen from our garage recently. If I had a camera system installed in my home from ADT, I would have known exactly what car possibly pulled up in my driveway and stole my little friend. If I had a security system from ADT, my dog would still be here. I called ADT this weekend, and they're coming out in a few days to install a camera and a new security system. Unfortunately, it's a little too late for me. Listen, protect everyone you love in your family. Call ADT now. Have them come out and give you a quote to install a full security system in your home. Don't let it be too late for you. Call right now.
Paid for by the Home Security Hotline. 800-200-6543. 800-200-6543. 800-200-6543. That's 800-200-6543.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Low and low price stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Allman at Burn on the Board. SP Futures down 6. NASDAQ Futures up 10. So we're leaking here a little bit when we came in, but not much. Dow Futures now down 71. They were only down 25. Home Depot's, we just talked about them, they're down 263. We got Apple up 144. IBM down 50 cents. Nothing going crazy here. United Healthcare is down 178, but things went up so much. Can't worry too much about that one. Disney's up a buck. Over in Asia, interesting markets here. Nikkei down 712. 1.8, they were down over 2 and came back only to be down 7, only to be down 712. 38,104, the whole number there. Hang Seng down 5, 17,936, so still under 18,000, but not much of a movement last night. They were down, I guess, fairly heavy and came back. Shanghai down 16.6%, that's a reasonable move there. 3,015, another day like that, they're back below 3,000. We'll see if that happens. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 40, then these guys are down pretty heavy on Friday, bouncing back a little. It's up 2%. FTSE up 8 cents. Call that flat. CAC around up 30 finally. 0.4% after their horrible week last week with the government. And John might comment a hair on that when we come back from break. Friday, Dow down 57. S&P down 2. NASDAQ still was not down. Kept their streak alive up 21. It was only 0.1%, but it was up. Bonds up 6 basis points now. 4.27. The Bund up 7. 2.42. Japan unchanged. 0.94. Oil. Still hanging in this up 46 cents, but 78.91. They've been somewhere between 77.5 and 80.5 now for really a long time. We've got the Brent up 46 cents, 83.08. Natural gas down 5 cents, 282. They briefly got over $3. Now they backed off to 282. So we could have bought them at 168, sold them at 3. What a nice trade. Buy the low, sell the high. It's always nice to do. It's very difficult to do, however. RBOB up a penny, 2.41. We've got gold down $16 now, 23.32 after having a decent day on Friday. Silver down 16 cents, 29.31. Copper down 7 cents, 4.41. We have U.S. dollar. It has been a little stronger because the euro's down to 107 flat, really. And the British pound under 127, 126.6. So dollar has been a little stronger the last week. Bitcoin, whack here, down 980, 65,536. It was 70,000 not that long ago. What do you have for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Yeah, good morning. Currently 7:38 a.m. Here on June 17th, 2024. Weather in Chicago, 82 degrees this morning. Modest breeze, though it'll be hot and humid throughout the day with lots of sunshine. High of 94 degrees today. Down in Phoenix, 81 degrees right now. It'll be very warm and very sunny with a high of 106. In sports, the MLB yesterday saw a White Sox lose to Diamondbacks 5-12. As well as that, Cubs lost their home game against the St. Louis Cardinals. Final score was 1-2. Tonight, Cubs play San Francisco Giants at 7:05 here in Chicago, and Sox are back on Tuesday with the Astros. In golf, the U.S. Open wrapped up yesterday. Bryson DeChambeau was the top player with total winnings of $4.3 million. It was his second win, and similar to his last, both with a final hole par. Rory McIlroy, who came in second, missed two short putts, which cost him the top position. Hard to watch there.
You think he'll ever forget that?
I don't think he will, no. That's pretty brutal. As far as the NBA Finals, Mavericks and Celtics in Game 5 tonight at 7:30, Boston Celtics are currently leading with 3-1 loss. So I got, Chief, back to you.
Regarding Rory McIlroy, who's allegedly, well, he's Irish, correct?
I believe so, something along those lines, yeah.
Now, John is an Irish lad. Nancy, you here?
I'm here.
How are you? I don't know where you come in on this. We'll give you a vote. My buddy Larry Murphy, Southside, I think he was St., what's the 187th Street? John, St. Killian's? He's Killian? A St. Killian's guy.
St. Killian.
He says to me in the bar years ago, this McIlroy guy, he's not Irish, he's from the north.
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think I'm in that camp of thought, but obviously, yeah. This Southside Catholic Irish guy, he's not really Irish, he's from the north. Okay, then. What do you think about that, Nance? Where's your vote there?
I think he's Irish. I'm sorry.
I think he does. He's not really Irish. He's not one of us. Okay, then. Do you think
that line doesn't work too well in Ireland anymore?
No, not anymore.
I thought they like to think of themselves as unified now in a way our ancestors probably would never have been able to get to.
Oh, yeah, I'm just saying. But let's just say it's not unheard of for the Irish group to be a hair selective as to who they deal with.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, can I say that because I'm half Irish?
Yeah,
let's say
sure.
One of my, actually one of the ladies, I used to back a couple of them. One, I think I backed trading for the first African-American lady trader. Mm. There were a lot of African-American ladies that were brokers, but she was the only one who was a market maker. I think she was the first. And her grandmother was like half Irish and half black, and her father was all black, right? Or somebody, anyway, but there was some Irish blood in there. To say there was a difference in attitude. Anyway, I won't go into it, but let's just say there's story about every people within every race and whatever it is. I mean, there's the black Irish and the other Irish, right? The red-haired Irish. I mean, it's just like...
Well, the lace curtain and the shiny Irish.
Oh, yeah. So what was the traditional curtain for the shiny Irish, Nance and Matt?
Oh, I have no idea. This is the first time I've ever heard Ireland isn't really Ireland.
I'm just saying. I didn't say that. I just said somebody else. But they used to say that the Shanty Irish put the Tribune, they taped the Tribune on the windows, and that was the curtains.
That's a good one.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, then there was some that had the lace curtains and some that had the you can't write
cheaper,
this stuff.
Cheaper ones, yeah.
Yeah, you can't make this stuff up, man.
Oh, there are a lot of Irish I knew of who wouldn't let the Tribune in their house.
Oh, know? Without a doubt. Oh, yeah, it was a Republican rag.
Yeah.
I mean, which it was, pretty much, but,
yeah.
I mean...
pretty anti-Irish, anti-Catholic, it was earlier.
Oh, then plus they were... Did anybody have a bigger... You think about Trump having, you know, spats with people in the news media. Could there ever have been a bigger spat ongoing between Roosevelt and McCormick?
Oh, my God, no.
I don't know if you read about it.
It wasn't just Roosevelt either.
No. Yeah, but I mean, they to the point where they, there were people who wanted to nail that guy for treason. He let out some war secrets at one point, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that?
What are we talking about now?
Just the Tribune. McCormick was the guy who ran the Tribune. He was an arch-conservative dude. And he and Roosevelt, let's say if they were in a room together, there would have been a fracas. They hated each other. Is that even a strong enough word, Jen?
Yeah, maybe who would be a comparable one? Say Rupert Murdoch, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but nobody. One of our Irish creatures just sent in. Ireland is Irish. Northern Ireland is British. There you go.
Wow.
See, Nancy, you don't even know this stuff about Irish people. You know, it's you know.
Just no, I didn't. I find this quite amusing.
Amusing? It's just historical facts. It's not, you know, it's not, do I amuse you? Or do I make you laugh? What does it say in our promo? So, Nance, what's going on? Go ahead.
It's just amusing because it's so different nowadays. When you look back, it's so different.
You like, think it
I
is.
I know my dad told me I couldn't buy a Japanese car because he lost his ancestors in World War II.
Well, let's just say when I was young, you didn't see too many Jewish people driving around in Mercedes.
Mm. Well, that's probably very true as yeah. well.
Well, yeah.
I never thought of that.
Well, yeah. I mean, really? why would you? You know, it's not like the people today did what the other people did, but it's just, you know, just the way things are. I mean, I don't think there's any love lost to this day between the Japanese and the Chinese, are there?
No, not at all.
All right, off this who doesn't like stuff. Nance, what's going on? Is there any bounce back in the... Let's put it this way. Has the retail market changed, or is my significant other still indicative of what's going on? Cash buyer to cash buyer to cash buyer.
I have not seen the market change at all. You know, I have not. In fact, more and more people I talk to who are in, you know, not in this market, like now I've talked to some people who move freight. They say it's extremely slow. Talk to people who are doing research. They say it's extremely slow. I don't think people realize the economy is really slowing down.
They don't realize or they don't want to realize it.
I just don't think they realize it, Tom. I think I have heard people starting to say that, you know, the food prices are just absolutely crazy. Everything's going up, 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 up. And it's, you know, it hasn't gotten to the news, obviously, but I mean, there is soft conversation about how expensive everything is. They're saying that the economy has gone up 20%. Prices have gone up 20% since COVID, and they went up 20% during COVID, they're saying. So, I mean, pricing is really, you know, the cost of goods are very high. So, I don't know. I don't see things changing for a while. Do you, John?
No, I think people are really spooked by the speed at which prices at the grocery store have shot up. And, you know, are really not slowing enough to make people want to take on, say, buying a house. If they're trying to make ends meet now and they have to eat, they have to feed their family, the last thing they want to do is take on a huge new, you know, expense and all the doubt, you know, associated with that. Even in good times, when people who are first-time home buyers are nervous, certainly. But in a time like this, I think people are just really gun-shot. I mean, you can't blame them.
No, I can't, but I don't see... I don't believe it's just the banking industry anymore. I just feel it's all the way across the board.
Nance, what would... how would the conversation change or be forced to change if, let's say... I guess I could lob the government. If enough people were given national access... And right now, the people who I think have national access on TV and stuff, even though, you know, the rights fight with the left and so forth, I think the national news, business news things, they're all about ratings and getting guests on there, to me. You know, and that's a harsh accusation, but, and you have these numbers coming out of government, and nobody really wants to be on their soapbox saying the numbers aren't right. However, I'm going to say that there's a few people now that you hear. I'm going to say that the number you just said, since COVID started, the government's admitting to actually more like 19%, 19-20, Nance.
Right.
I'm going to say that number really is 37 to 40. Well, if most people realize that that's the number, how much more do you think policy would change and things like that? Because the number is not 19. How long can people talk about rent being up 19% in 5 years when every other people that could keep track of rent, I mean, you know the names of companies, every one of them is saying it's 40 or 45. How long can we lie to ourselves?
Well, that is the question. I really don't have an answer for it because it just depends on who you're talking to, but you are correct in how you're saying that the news is saying it's only 19 to 20, and I do not believe that number.
Why do you...
And I don't know how you get people to understand, the masses to understand that these numbers are not anywhere near true. People are struggling, and if people were struggling last year, the same people I've checked up on this year are far worse off. Some of them are now on food stamps, and they're saying their $291 a month that they get is very helpful at the grocery store, because you can go in and buy nothing, and it's $100.
Without a doubt. I read this, you know what, Jen, I don't know where you are more, actually Greg's probably the best, digging stuff out of the internet. I read this thing a while ago, and it, you know, as you age, Nance, not that I'm not 25 anymore, you pick up on things you never would have when you were younger. And people look at it, I'll dig it up here, how many people are on, they don't call them food stamps anymore, what the hell are they? They're, what's the name of them, Jen? They're not food stamps, they're,
They're not food stamps.
What do they call them, Nance? There's another name for it. Anyway, but if you look at the amount of, people on food stamps, and, you know, the people who, you know, walked to school uphill and against the wind both ways and did everything on their own, all that kind of crap. They're against people that are on food stamps. But there's a number someplace about how many people actually would qualify for food stamps that aren't on them. They're either too proud or don't know. And the number is in the millions. Isn't it, Jen?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where you get that, I mean, right now. But, I mean, it's I'll find this here on my debt clock thing, how many people are actually getting that kind of stuff. But in a bit, there's people that, I mean, how many people actually would qualify? Don't even know it. I got to believe a lot of families that are making $45,000 a year probably would qualify, wouldn't they?
No, I believe the number is 27, but
that's probably per person.
That is the number per person. But I do believe what you're saying is true, because I have clients who would be eligible for it, but are too proud to get it.
How many? What's your guys' number? I'm looking at it right here. How many people do you think in this country are currently food stamp recipients?
10%?
No, I mean, give me a number. How many million
in
people?
In the United States?
Yep.
I don't know. Half a million?
Jan?
30 million?
43, and I'm going to guess there's another 15 that would qualify.
Wow.
Yes, we got 43 million people living in poverty, homeless. And the median income of an individual, this has actually gone up dramatically in the last few months, is now $39,500. In 2000, it was $31,000. All right, and a median new home in 2000 was $164,000. You know this better than me. You're in a business. And now it's $411,000. The average new car in 2000 was 22, and now it's 52. And you're right, Nance. We're not doing so hot.
No, we're not. We're absolutely not. And people just are not admitting it or talking about it. I think probably 20% are starting to really realize that, you know, we're headed in a path that is not a positive direction. It's pretty negative.
I'm looking at this median new home right now. It's $411,000. You're the expert.
A median home is $411,000.
Yep.
Wow.
You're the expert. How many people over the last 7 years that you plunked in a home, whatever, 3.5%, when the house, let's say 3 years ago, 4 years ago, was probably $360,000? How many of those people today could afford this $411,000 with a 7% mortgage?
Oh, not very many. Not very many at all.
John, how scary is that?
Well, yeah, and the thing is, Tom, that's based on house sales. So that median sales price of $411,000 shows that the only properties that are selling in big enough numbers nationwide to get the average up that high are the higher priced into the millions and and down below.
Well, this isn't mean. This is median.
Yeah,
it's not average.
But that shows how poor the market is below for the properties that are not selling at all. So,
well, I'm cleaning up in here, Nance. Believe a little bit, and I find this piece of paper that I had a long debate with my significant other and your good friend Audrey in 2007 regarding when 85% of the people cannot afford a median home, you got a problem. And I'm going to say the numbers are way worse now than they were in 2007. Now, there isn't anywhere near the catalyst of people borrowing money from Japan and stacking mortgage on top of mortgage and having 35 hours of leverage on every dollar of mortgage like you had in 2007. Yet, you probably would know this more than... You know that the signature loan that everybody was the example of 2007 decadence, the Morgan, was it the Morgan Stanley loan to the bank in Europe, Jan? That was the first one that fell apart. Was that the... What hedge fund was that over there? Was that the Barclays... It was something off the Barclays balance sheet or something like that? Well, you know that they didn't have... Nancy, you probably know this. They did not have enough mortgages to fill up all the demand for these mortgage... These bundled mortgage loans. That mortgage loan was totally synthetic based on another mortgage loan, another mortgage basket. There were no actual mortgages in it. It was a synthetic portfolio. Didn't even have any loans in it. How scary is that? Anyway, I don't think there's anything like that today. Do you, Nance? I mean, the system seems better.
No. Well, because the only reason, the difference... in my opinion, is that in 2007, people were, the foreclosure rate was the big catalyst that started the whole thing. And they're not foreclosing on homes like they used to. They're actually extending they're allowing the people to stay in, and they're extending the life of the loan. Basically, that's what they're doing. They're adding the payments to the back end of the loan.
Okay.
So when the people go to sell their home, they're not going to have anywhere near the equity they thought they did. And I don't believe people really care. They're just going to stay until they die. You know, people are saying, I hear more and more people saying, you're going to take me out feet first because there's no way I'm leaving this mortgage rate I have and the payments I have. Well, so you're not getting you're not even getting people excited or eager or anything like that to, they don't have that feeling that, I want to move up or I want to get something bigger. They're just saying, I'm just staying here because this is the best I can afford. I'm barely making it now.
Well, it's right, because if you go somewhere else and it's 7%, you're screwed. Right.
Right, and people are starting to really understand what that means.
The huge catalyst last time, when I say last time, the 2007 fiasco, is once you started, I'm going to postulate why these people are doing this, I think, Nance. Not the people that are staying in their homes, the people that are allowing them to stay there, wasn't the total fiasco in 2007-08, sort of based on the fact, these were numbers at the time. The median home was about 235, right, Nance? So
I thought it was about 170 back then, 180.
I'm thinking it was higher than that, but whatever.
But that's okay.
I just try my number. Say it was 235, and so somebody in the article I had was, if somebody gave you 20% down payment, your parents, whoever it was, or you saved up for it, which people do, so you plunk down, let's say, 50. So your mortgage is now 185. When basically the bleep hit the fan, a lot of these houses hit the market, right? So the 235 median home dropped to 165. So even though mortgage rates came down for people, they couldn't refinance because their house could no longer be assessed, even though they may never have missed, you remember this, Nan, even though they never missed a payment, you couldn't get them a new mortgage because the house did not appraise out now where they paid for it or even close to it.
And I think what's happening now is the industry is being very careful to try and not let that happen. Because I have to think, and I want your opinion, if all of a sudden somebody's house has hit the market and this 411 went to like 310, you'd have absolutely chaos in the mortgage in the housing industry, wouldn't you?
Well, that's the same thing we saw last time, but you are starting to see, because of this tight market that we have where no homes are available, you are starting to see the prices get kind of ridiculous again.
Yeah.
And if people start paying it, I believe we have our feet on that path just at the beginning right now.
I believe
that is starting, but you haven't seen enough of it yet. I mean, when you start seeing homes that normally would have been 220, 240, and they're now listing for 300, 320, 340. I've even seen some for 440. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But then again, I have a client who actually bought a home and they're trying to fix it up in a neighborhood where the homes really cost about 220. And he told me it cost him $50,000 to get a new kitchen.
That's
really crazy.
As my buddy Rob says to me, if you're going to remodel homes, don't ever do it in a low-priced neighborhood, because the concrete and the plasterboard cost the same amount in a $300,000 house as it does in a $1 million house.
Well, you're starting to see that now. So maybe these homes are worth more.
Well, maybe.
I don't know what the cost of building is anymore. I don't have my finger on that like I used to.
Well, Audrey sent me this picture. Of course, Audrey's ever the one who looks at every house. You know, we went down to Ogden Dunes on Saturday night, and people were winging numbers around down there, $500,000-$600,000. And I'm looking at these things, Nance, they're a shack. Nobody wants their house being called a shack, but I'm going, $500,000-$600,000, you're out of your mind. But that would just be me. But she sent me a picture. She sent you the one of the place in Palos where they wanted like $988,000 for the thing?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, God,
one.
The place is, John, you wouldn't believe this joint, Southside guy. The thing is gorgeous. It's probably got they've got half of a, I won't say lake, because what do they call them in Palos? They're kettle moraines, which is a lake, essentially. It's wrapped around this lake with this huge cement pond, as Granny would say, this huge swimming pool. The place is on, I don't know how many acres, own private driveway. It is, I don't think, Nancy or John, if you gave me those plans and said, build this place today with the pool and the docks and the pool house and everything, I don't think I could touch building that place for $2.2 million right now. And it's on sale for $988,000. I'm not going to pay that for a house, but the fact is, in terms of replacement value, it's probably a steal, right, Nance? I mean, I don't see how you get close to that thing for $988,000.
That's true.
How do you buy 5 acres on a lake where half the lake's yours, for God's sake? I would even find that. It's pretty nice.
I don't know. It's mind-boggling how this conversation started out one way. Hey. Now it's leading to another and another and another. And even the conversation you had before this, where how do you invest the money in the 20 stocks?
Or avoid them. Avoid the 20. How do you do that?
And still turn a profit. And I was interested in what you... So you're saying Fisher Investments just puts it in private in...
Well, they have their it's a cookie cutter thing. You know, they're going to talk to you, and you're going to be involved in this much big cap, this much the other. I mean, it's not like they're not straight; they are, but everything's long. There's nothing individually managed. I don't think you can bring. Maybe you can. I don't know that way. You can't bring them. Like if you showed up at PTI and you said, "Okay, I'd like to be a little bit of the protected index program," but by the way, my dad left me 20,000 shares of something and something, and I don't want to sell it. Well, we would figure out a way to either not manage it if you didn't want it, or if you wanted us to. Because it's a concentration issue. Do you want us to try and protect it with some puts or some calls or something? You know, we would do that. But most people want you to just bring a check and go into a couple of various, what percentage, depending on your age, or we want you to be 40% high cap or big cap, 20% mid cap, 10% whatever, and 25% fixed income. So you're just going to go in. You don't get to choose any of the stocks or anything like that. They don't want your own. That's how those
when the market goes up, that's why they do spectacularly well. They take credit for the market going up. When it goes down, it's the government's fault, right? But I mean, there's nothing individually managed of any kind. Well, you say, wait a minute, I don't want all my money in the funds. I want, you know, I want to protect it by puts, or I want to get some incomes with covered. They're not going to do that. You know, whatever. It's all just. But you know that going in. I'm not saying anything bad about them. I'm just saying it's.
I've seen their commercials. I've seen people talk about them, and I had no idea this is what they did. I thought they individualized the program towards you.
Well, they do. You're 60%. The next guy will be 65%. So it's individualized, but it's not. It's called a pizza pie kind of thing, where everybody. If I get a statement from somebody at Fidelity or any of these places by a new client, there'll be the circle, the pizza pie thing, and you're 60% big cap, you're this and the other. And that's what everybody's in. But they're absolutely correct when they say, we make more money if you make more money. Because if you bring them $1 million and they charge you, you know, 1% or 1.5%, and the market runs up, the next year it's $1.2 million, they're going to get a percent or percent and a half, $1.2 million, not $1 million. So they're correct. They make more money when you make more money. Okay, but it doesn't mean they're like doing anything for it other than putting you in the market. I mean, you could, if you wanted to be in an index and not even talk to somebody, you could bring a check to PTI and buy, you know, whatever. You got $1 million, you could buy $500,000 in the spiders, $300,000 in the Qs, put the rest in the T-bills, and we'd never talk to you for a year. You know, it's just there. But if ever you call up and say, I don't like the market, how can I protect it? At least we're there. But I mean, it's the same as being these other places, except we wouldn't charge a fee for that. You just bought them. You just got them. I mean, an ETF is just like a stock. You buy one and you got it. You buy the spiders one time. I mean, if one of your nieces or nephews, Nance, if you want to give them $100,000, you could do that out of petty cash. We would just say, hey, put your hundred, right, Jen? Put your $100,000 in the SPY, and you got an account here for, you know, Nancy Jr., and who knows? 10 years from now, she's up or down, probably up, hopefully. I mean, there's a lot of ways to do this. You don't have to pay people a fee for all this stuff. Just saying.
Well.
It's a very complicated industry. I mean, a lot of people, you know, do a lot of stuff, this or that. But if you really want to grow dramatically, like Fisher Investments, if I were to do it all over again, that's what I would do. I'd have a one size fits all to a certain extent. I'd have four managers. I'd put it in there. I wouldn't do anything individual for anybody. It's way too much work, and I'd play a lot more golf. As a matter of fact, I play golf. I haven't played in a long time. That's what you would do. But now individually managed is very difficult, because even if somebody says, by the way, what's your track record? And you say, well, for Nancy, she's got bazillion shares of Exxon stock and UPS. UPS is down 40% in the last 4 years, but we protected it and we're only down, say, 15 or 20 rather than the 40. You mean you're down 15 or 20? No, what I said was in the UPS one. Well, here's another one that they picked stuff was going upward. So I'm saying if you do individual stuff for people, you can't even get a track record because it's not commingled. It's very complicated, Nancy. See, you got me going down this road. I'm supposed to be doing that to you.
Oh, sorry. I just found it very interesting, that's all.
Well, it is interesting. It's crazily interesting. John, we're going to be dashing here. Any last question for Nance? We covered a lot of stuff today.
I appreciate, Nancy, your comment that people know what it takes to meet their monthly nut, and nobody likes to be lied to, which is when you look at the numbers for rent or, you know, housing and stuff. People don't buy that, and that kind of distrust is not good for business either.
I have an attorney buddy. You know what I'm talking about, Dak, Jan, and he did a closing for one of his daughter's friends. This is a while back. And he says, you know, and she was buying a condo downtown. So she'd saved up some money. Good girl. I mean, good work, you know, nice job, the whole bit. And he said, you know, she goes, literally, I had to buy dinner after the closing. Every nickel was in the down payment in this place. Now in a condo, you know, you shouldn't have a problem with the furnace going out and whatever, but how close to the edge are these people doing this stuff, Nance? Well, what if the air conditioner goes out 2 years from now? Do they have enough money for it? Or is it on a credit card?
Well, Tom, I think everything's on a credit card right now.
Yeah.
From what I understand, and the credit card is just the credit card number is just phenomenal right now.
Well, you're seeing that more than anybody, right? I mean, when people come in, they got to give you everything.
I try to tell them not to do that. I think that that's, I think the noose becomes too tight. It's not real. It's very hard to save money in this economy because all you need is one or two things to go wrong, and then the dominoes start falling. And or even like the price of food just keeps going up, up, up. You have to eat. You have to have medical attention, and it's just going up like crazy.
Yeah, I would agree. Nance, thank you very much. Maybe I'll see you, you know, this week. Never know. We're off on Wednesday. Are you guys at a huge...
Maybe Wednesday we can see John. Who knows?
Well, I don't know. John? Oh, you got to really travel to see John. I had to go
it's
to South Madison.
It's only one day. It's kind of far. Who knows?
Right.
You guys should actually meet one of these days. It'd be kind of nice.
Absolutely.
Oh, God.
I agree.
S&P Futures down 7. NASDAQ Futures positive 2.
Guys.
Matt, nice job. Good stuff, gang. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks. Remember, there's no show Wednesday.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.